This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Luis Garcia, you ain't going nowhere, buddy. I don't care what Blum says. I don't care what Callis says. Dusty Baker made it clear. Luis Garcia coming off those seven innings yesterday. He ain't going nowhere.
Nor should he.
If you got to piggyback him off someone, do what you got to do. But the man with the long hair should not go anywhere.
Well, see what I did there. Now I really did.
It's a three-piece combo for you.
It sure was.
That's how you start lunch off.
You got to. There's a place for Luis Garcia on this roster, period. On this staff, period. Starting pitcher, long reliever. Hell, I think he could even get a key out in a postseason game as an eighth inning or ninth inning guy. I mean, there's a place for him on this roster. You do not move him down.
Yeah, you look at the Astros, and we're a third through the season now. It's just really crazy how they kind of do things, and it's what's fun about covering a ball club that you expect so much from. But every time that you feel like they're on the brink of reaching a low point, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Yankees, Dodgers, Padres, the Astros right now, with all these guys coming back in the lineup, and we got to see Yordan and Yuli return to the lineup yesterday. Who knows when Michael Brantley will be back and when Lance McCullers is going to come back. This team, heading into the second third of the season now, I don't want to say they're peaking, but they're in the toughest stretch of the season when it comes to the schedule. Now, obviously, they're not on the road, but when it comes to the quality of opponents, they're in the toughest stretch, and it just looked like they could potentially be left for dead for that stretch after Saturday's game when the bullpen was spent. You were coming off back-to-back extra inning games. Sometimes you don't know what to expect from Zach Greinke, but you fast forward, Greinke, eight innings, Urquidy back, six innings, Garcia, seven innings yesterday, and now Framber Valdez is going to make his second start. They're still trying to stretch him out coming off those four innings. There's a lot of possibilities for this squad, and you talk about, you know, making moves and putting teams over the top. The return of all these guys into the lineup and into the rotation, this team could be peaking in the summer and separating themselves from a lot of squads and putting themselves in position for yet another playoff push.
Obviously, they've had some issues with injuries, and that's something that you absolutely have to keep an eye on. Let's see. You know, I was talking about talking in code. Let's see what exactly McCullers' issue is. Certainly, Brantley seems to be lingering an injury that didn't seem that severe at first. But that said, I think they've got the guys. They've got the key elements to the. They've got the key elements to the team that, first of all, you know, you talk about how the Texans like to create a culture. They can't do it with this roster. It's just going to be turned over so much. Astros can create a culture with this roster. There's only four or five guys that are really the core players from 2017, 2019, but they're strong enough that it can trickle down to the other players.
Let's just rub this imaginary crystal ball that we got in the middle of the studio here, because you obviously don't have Justin Verlander like you have in the past in postseason runs, and you didn't have him last year. What does this rotation look like in the postseason? Like, what does this rotation look like? Just try to forecast what you think this rotation looks like. I think Greinke's a no-brainer.
Oh, yeah, Greinke for sure.
McCullers is a no-brainer.
McCullers for sure. Odorizzi.
You sure?
No, I'm asking. Odorizzi has had his moments. He's a perfect, at his best, number three guy. That's his role if he can get his stuff together.
I think Fromber, if Fromber gets stretched out with what we saw from Fromber last year, I think Fromber is ideal. That's a lefty that you don't necessarily
gotta have him.
Urquidy's gotten some valuable postseason experience the last couple of years as well. To me, I'm looking at Greinke, McCullers, Fromber, Urquidy, and Garcia. Like the thing about a postseason rotation is there are a lot of times where you can trim it down, and if you have that workhorse, you can say, okay, you got a three-man rotation for the most part, and there's going to be some guys that are going to be pitching on 3 days rest, but that's the way you roll.
Yeah.
But with all these long relievers and stuff, a lot of times in the postseason, the hook is shorter, so you're going to find yourself in position where McCullers gets in trouble in the fifth inning and you have to take him out after four and a third. That's really where having guys like Odorizzi, Fromber, Urquidy, that's where having those guys is really, really valuable. Javier, like you have all these long relievers that I think are actually, I think the value is there in the regular season, but I think in the postseason is where the value is just extremely significant.
I totally agree. I think how I feel about Luis Garcia, and I know you feel the same way. I think he's a guy that is, you know, there's a lot there. He's 24. I think there he's just got that interesting delivery that I think throws people the first time through the batting order for sure. He's got he's got everything you want in a pitcher. I don't know if you can throw him in as a starter automatically, but you can use him as a starter and you can use him as a long reliever in the interim. There are going to be games where even Zach Greinke, heaven forbid, or Lance McCullers, heaven forbid, gets knocked out in the fourth inning, but you start playing catch up. Use him in those long middle relief innings to keep his pitch count up. He threw 103 pitches last night. He is good to go. I mean, that's not chump change to go seven innings on 103 pitches.
You talk about like the transition from like, you know, bring him up to the minors or leave him in the big leagues. A lot of times the mental asset comes into play, and more times than not, when you talk about it, it's you don't want to break his spirit in the big leagues. You don't want to bring him up too early. There was a debate over Kyle Tucker early on. What the hell is this guy doing here? He can't hit. He doesn't look like he belongs in the big leagues, but you know, they maintained, and it was Luno at the time, this is valuable experience, and it looks like it's paying off for Kyle Tucker, who had his second straight three-hit night yesterday. When it comes to Garcia, I just wonder if there could be that opposite effect where this guy has found himself in the big leagues, and he's coming off back-to-back career-long starts, coming off, you know, career outings and back-to-back starts. I just wonder what it does for someone mentally, and if there's almost like an opposite impact that you think that you're like keeping this guy stretched out and you're sending him to the minors, but there's almost that negative impact where all of a sudden he goes from the big leagues to freaking Sugarland or Corpus Christi, and that negatively impacts him mentally on almost the opposite side of things.
And keep in mind, as a Venezuelan baseball player, he's been playing professional baseball since he was a teenager. So he's been in big moments. He's come up through the system and all that stuff. He's 24, but it's not like this guy has, you know, that this is all, you know, he's a babe in the woods. I mean, he's not, and I think he's proved it with just kind of his toughness here.
If you ask me, the guy that I think I would move back in the rotation, it would be Odorizzi.
That's a tough call.
God, it's tough. I know, it's really tough.
Mm-hmm. You brought him in for a reason.
Yeah, but
he hasn't showed it.
But look at what Garcia's doing, man.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what this guy's doing right now. And I don't know that could they go six man rotation?
No. I mean, spot starts here and there, but really five is about where you get your best spot start.
So what's wrong with the six man? Is it just a creature of habit?
Yeah, then you have too much throwing in between starts. You know, Greinke has a schedule. All these pitchers have a schedule. You know, you pitch, you loosen up the second day. The first day after, the second day you throw a long toss, third day you throw a little bit, and then you pitch.
Right now I think you're in a good spot, though, with Valdez and Javier, in that I think Fromber's obviously on a pitch count, which pisses him off. You can tell he wants to fight somebody when you take him out after four. Hell, he wants to fight somebody when you take him out after 100 pitches. But right now he's kind of on a pitch count, so I think it's just a perfect natural thing for Javier to piggyback off of Valdez. But I'm looking at these arms, man, and I know this year you're having to have debates over whether to send Garcia down or anything like that. Greinke's contract's going to be up after this year, and I don't know if Zach's even going to pitch after this season. I don't know what the plan is for Zach. But you're looking at these young guys. McCullers, you just signed to the extension. Fromber, you expect him to be one of your key guys moving forward. Akiti's a young guy. Christian Javier, you got some upside with some of these youngsters. Some serious upside with some of these young guys.
You do. One of them, at least, is not going to pan out to what you thought it was. That's just the way it works. So you got to throw them out there, use them in spot starts, use them in long relief, and ride the hot hand. And right now, Luis Garcia is the hot hand. You do nothing with him except use him as a spot starter. If anybody else doesn't come, if McCullers doesn't come back in time, and then put him in the bullpen. He's a major league pitcher, 100%. Don't even mess with it.
Astros looking for their fourth straight win tonight, third straight win over the Red Sox. Fromber Valdez on the bump. The second third of the season begins tonight on AT&T Sportsnet. Coley versus Korn, Volume 2. Korn took down David Coley yesterday. Apparently they made more sense than the head coach of the Houston Texans. We're going to give away tickets to the Korn concert coming to town September 19th at the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion shortly. Tickets go on sale at LiveNation.com. They're actually on sale right now. But before we do that, it is the rematch. David Coley trying to take down Korn after a tough L yesterday. Who makes more sense, Coley or Korn? Let's start with David Coley with a little boxing analogy.
You know, I'm a big boxing fan. And I followed boxing my whole life. I actually have a passion for that. And I can remember I'd had some meetings with the McNairs, very good meetings. Coming out of those meetings, I didn't feel one way or the other. I just felt like when I came out of those meetings I says, if I'm fortunate enough and blessed enough to be a part of this organization right here, then everything that I've ever worked for during my career would be right now the epitome of why I have been doing what I've been doing.
What?
I was sitting there, and this is why I almost went down. I used the reference of boxing, is because I felt like somebody hit me with a right hook, you know. And the way it happened was Nick was on the phone. He made a FaceTime call. I didn't know who he was calling. He called Kyle, and all of a sudden he says, "Here." He gave me the phone. And Mr. McNair said to me, says, "David, how would you like to be the head football coach of the Houston Texans?" Well, I almost at that point, I was standing and I was by a rail. I almost went down, but I caught the rail before I went down. And never in this profession and in my career have I been more excited and felt so good about my journey to this point.
What?
When he told me he wanted me that.
All right. That's contestant one.
That was a long road right there.
That's a weird boxing analogy there.
Winding road.
Didn't really see it. All right, so does that make more sense than this? This is a song by Korn called Twist. All right. Okay.
I got that one.
I actually get that more than I did to Coley. So he's basically, I think at the beginning, he's having an argument with his girl, and then it's going in like circles, and then there's twists to it.
Can I read you the lyrics?
Go ahead.
You, not rot, dot, and dot, and dot, per, rot, dot, not, dot, per, not, kai, cot, and dot, or ah. Twist.
Okay.
You got that?
Yeah. It makes more sense than Coley to me.
I don't know if I can argue that very much.
713-572-4610. Korn or Coley. Speaking of Korn right now, caller number 8. 713-572-4610. Caller number 8. You're going to get to go see Korn at the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion September 19th. Tickets on sale now at Live Nation, but we're going to give you a chance to win them right now. Coming up, we're into June, which means it could happen. It means two things. We'll tell you what they are next.
Three,
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. We're into June. So the Deshaun Watson situation is ongoing. The Julio Jones situation is ongoing. Two potential moves, both very significant. It really depends on where Julio Jones ends up. If he goes to a team like New England or something like that, he can help him, but it doesn't just shift the landscape of things. If he goes to Baltimore or he goes to Indianapolis, and he's what he is, I mean, and he's able to stay on the field, you could be talking about a Reggie White 1993, Deion Sanders 94 with San Francisco, 95 with the Cowboys type of non-quarterback move that just elevates a team up into the upper tier of the NFL. Really, it just depends where he goes. Deshaun Watson, regardless of where he ends up, he elevates a team significantly. But those are the two moves that we're keeping an eye on, and those are the two moves that really the NFL is keeping an eye on, even indirectly with the Aaron Rodgers situation, because that kind of, I think, can be connected to Deshaun. But those are the two moves into June that most of the NFL fans, most of the NFL media types are discussing as significant potential moves that could alter the AFC, the NFL, whatever.
Yeah, they shift the paradigm. I mean, they shift power, the power structure, if you will. I think Julio Jones definitely fits into that category. Yes, he's 31. I don't care because the team that gets him is going to be a team that is, pretty close already to winning a championship. So he's going to absolutely be that type of guy that can put him over the top. No question about it.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. I can't really get a grasp of where he's going to end up. I think Baltimore makes the most sense. I just don't know if that's the direction that Baltimore is going to
Colts.
Go. The Colts make sense. I just don't know if they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know how aggressive the Colts are going to be. I don't know what the market is. Someone said that they were being offered a first-round pick. I find that hard to believe. Peter King,
I think they would have taken
his eyes at that.
Yeah, I think they would have taken it.
It seems like a no-brainer. Second-rounder appears to be what most people are insinuating. But I will say this, and I think this is what separates the Julio Jones trade, a potential Julio Jones trade, from the DeAndre Hopkins trade, is that when more teams are involved and more teams are trying to acquire somebody, typically market value can increase. And when you have all these teams connected, you assume, yeah, a second round pick for a guy in his 30s that's had durability concerns recently, that's the market value. But the more teams that are involved, the higher the price can go up.
Absolutely.
And maybe you're willing to throw in something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's just logical that that's going to be the case. And I think no team is in a better position right now than the Falcons. I mean, there's no questions about Julio Jones. There's no question that multiple teams are going to be in the market. They may well have floated that first-round pick themselves just kind of as a fishing expedition, you know, to see if anybody would bite on that and also offer a first-round pick. They're in a great spot, Atlanta.
Atlanta's in a good spot. And you gotta wonder, would Jacksonville be another team that would be interesting?
Tennessee,
in
or the entire AFC South outside the Texans.
Tennessee wants him. The players are pressuring ownership to make that move. They had a lot of key losses on the offensive side of the rock with their OC, Jonnu Smith, and then Corey Davis going to the Jets. Would Jacksonville be interested in making that move? And I don't know what Julio Jones wants either. I don't know how much it matters. I think the only thing we know is that he wants out of Atlanta, but he could very well end up in this division. I think the most significant move would be the one to Indianapolis. I think of all the moves, that's the one right there that raises the eyebrows. Absolutely. A little bit, and it catches the attention not only of the teams in the South that'll have to face him twice, but even the Kansas City Chiefs of the world, the Baltimore Ravens, the Cleveland Browns of the world. Julio Jones goes to the Indianapolis Colts. They're right up there in that top tier.
Absolutely. I think they're right there behind the Chiefs, maybe with them. But I wouldn't necessarily pick the Bills over the Colts with Julio Jones and everything else that the Colts have, especially adding to their defense, which was already great. I wouldn't necessarily pick the Ravens over them. Browns, although I'm liking the Browns, especially what they're doing now. But I think that the Colts would immediately get into that Super Bowl discussion.
We're in the situation, obviously, with Deshaun Watson, where financially it makes more sense now than it did before yesterday. But the discussion keeps going on, and John McClain is right in the center of it. You know, when will Deshaun Watson be traded? Is he going to be traded? Is he going to be forced to report? Are the Texans going to try to trade to Deshaun Watson so that they can at least get something for him? There's just a lot of questions. It seems like there's more questions now than there's ever been in regards to Deshaun Watson and a potential trade.
I just maybe I'm just a big old dummy. I just have felt for the longest time.
Be so hard on yourself.
I just felt for the longest time that it's going to happen soon after June 1st, and we are soon after June 1st. You said it. I mean, McClain is plugged in a lot better than anybody in this room, but we also have people we talk with, and people and logic tells us that they need to move on from this. I keep going back to last week, David Culley. Asked by Christy Rieken and Sarah Barshup specifically about Deshaun being on the Zoom meetings, any discussions, the most uncomfortable a person could possibly look. And now project that every day that David Culley speaks between now and soon after Deshaun Watson is traded, whenever that is. They don't want that. They just don't want
Can't
that.
They end that, though? Can't they just
No.
say he's not here?
No, but they're going to be asked every single day. There's going to be
is that really that uncomfortable? Can't you just say, "Oh, yeah"? I mean, he's here.
I wish they
would. Or he's not here.
Or he's not here.
Can't they just end that?
They could.
I need an organization that's mentally tough. That's not going to allow something like that to lead to them making like
a
potential monumental situation. I know how they were. I don't know how they are.
About image and reputation.
I don't know that they care as much about that as they. I mean, they try to.
The McNairs care.
I mean, look who's still in the building.
Oh, I understand that, but he's selling them on culture and image and
which
doing,
is silly.
Doing the next right
which
thing.
Which is silly.
And they're buying it. No, they're really really aware, more so than most NFL teams about bad PR. And
who exactly does that? I was thinking about this the other day. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. Stanford Route joining us at 12:40. Who exactly are they trying to impress with that?
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. Like, because you've been here longer than me. Tell me. Like, who do you think? Who do you believe? Because I can switch styles. Shout out to Chameleonaire. Like, I can go to the dive bar where there's piss on the floor and it's dollar pints, and then I can go to the River Oaks Country Club if you want, and I can fit in. I don't hear any of those people sitting there saying, you know what, I just love the way the Texans do things. You know, it might be kind of a mediocre treadmill and they frustrate you as a fan, but you know what, I just love this image and I love the fact that they have this like great reputation. Who exactly is that for? Could you say it, and I agree, but who are they impressing?
That's a great question. I think they do it mostly to project this standard. That they
to
want
who?
To themselves, you know, to they want to be known as a team that has this high standard of character and giving,
faith, family, football,
and faith, family, football, and now I would venture to say 80, maybe 90% of people that show up at that stadium could care less about the standards of and practices.
You think
of
even 10% care?
Maybe. I mean, the people, there are fans who want to be represented by the right kind of people, air quotes. You just asked a great question. Who are they trying to impress? I think they're just trying to project this image and this standard to themselves, for themselves.
I just don't know. Like, a lot of times I think teams try to portray something. Like in Cleveland, I think they just want to be a representation of the city. Like it's like that. But I just don't know. I don't know. Like I agree with you that they do try to have this standard, and you talk about community and stuff like that. I just don't know who exactly it's for. It doesn't seem to appeal to my, like this whole, like it almost seems like they're doing the bare minimum and they're acting like it's like enough for everyone to be satisfied. I love these tours that the McNairs are making, and, mm-hmm. and my gosh, what they did for Yates High School is great, but maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like most organizations that I followed and teams that I've covered, they're doing the same type of stuff.
Sure.
But it's not like something that they just, you know, take pride in. Like they're
you don't hang your hat on it. A lot of teams.
No, you're trying to get to the next level. You're trying to win at the highest level, and you're mm-hmm. trying to win games.
Yeah,
that's not like something that you use as a mask after you give Bill O'Brien full control yeah. and you bring in somebody else. That's not like something that makes anyone feel good. It's good for you, and it's great for the community, and I appreciate it. But I don't. It doesn't make me feel any better about where this organization is and how they functioned the last 2 years.
But I'm just telling you, that's how they operate, and that's what they're proud of, and they hang their hat on. They don't have championships to hang their hat on right now, so that's what they do. And it goes back to why I believe sooner rather than later with Deshaun Watson, they don't like being uncomfortable. They do not like being uncomfortable in that building, and that's just the way they are, and that's fine. They're going to be really, really uncomfortable until the weeks after Deshaun is traded.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. An Astros champion is in town, and he's apologetic to everyone except one person. Plus, guess what? Stanford Routes weekly visit next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
A lot of Astros fans kind of envious of the Boston Red Sox. Before you get pissed at me, loopholes, hear me out. Alex Cora has returned to the Boston Red Sox after his one-year suspension. After managing the Red Sox to a World Series, being involved in the cheating scandal, he was suspended for a year. Boston brought him back. That's what a lot of people feel should have happened with AJ Hinch. I think a lot of people would love for AJ Hinch to be the manager of the Houston Astros right now, much like Alex Cora is with the Boston Red Sox.
Okay.
Now, Cora was a part of that Astros coaching staff in 2017, and many people believe that Alex Cora was the scapegoat for many, including Jeff Luhnow. Cora spoke to Mark Berman, very, very accountable for his role in the Astros cheating scandal, but not appreciative of Jeff Luhnow throwing him under the bus and acting like he was the orchestrator of a sign-stealing scandal that began before he got here and continued afterwards. Jeff Luhnow went far enough to even call him the bench coach and not even call him by his name.
Yeah.
Little-known fact about this, probably the biggest display of on-field drama maybe in all of baseball the last couple of seasons, but for sure involving the Houston Astros, took place between the Dodgers and the Stros, and it was Joe Kelly versus Carlos Correa.
The pouty face.
The main reason for Joe Kelly's anger was the way in which he felt the Astros organization treated yep. Alex Cora. Here is Joe Kelly talking about one of the main reasons that he decided to throw the ball behind Carlos Correa and how the pouty face and the on-field drama emerged between the Stros and Dodgers.
Yes, everyone's involved. But the way that thing was ran over there was not from coaching staff. They're not the head boss in charge of that thing. It's the players. I played for a manager. His name's Alex Cora. And this guy lost his job, which people knew the real story would actually hate the players even more. And Alex Cora is a great dude. He's been a great baseball player, great manager, baseball smart. He's got an older brother. He's got a dad. They're all baseball. Now Alex Cora's sitting in Puerto Rico with his family, and I'm sure he still gets shit. You get immunity and then you rat like a little bitch. And I don't think that's right. And to take it a step further, supposedly the Yankees and the Red Sox cheating. Let's just put it straight. It's a joke. Give yourself an edge on the opposing pitcher. It's fair game. What you're doing is giving instant feedback, live signs during a game is not fair game. So for all the people out there saying, oh, the Red Sox, the Yankees, so for them saying like, oh, you're on a cheating team too. It ain't about that. It's about being a respectable human being and not lying to save your own ass.
It's hard to argue a lot of that stuff. You don't have to like Joe Kelly. You don't have to like the Red Sox or Alex Cora. But Jeff Luhnow is the one that orchestrated the whole thing and set all these things in motion, including the venom for the players.
Not according to him. He disagrees with that. But Jared Carrabas of Barstool Sports, not a fan of Jeff Luhnow throwing Alex Cora under the bus. This is an epic rant from Carrabas of Barstool, ranting on Boston Red Sox manager Alex Cora and Jeff Luhnow throwing him under the bus.
This piece of said, quote, I did not personally direct, oversee, or engage in any misconduct. The sign-stealing initiative was not planned or directed by baseball management. That was a lie, according to the Wall Street Journal. Luhnow, accepting zero responsibility for his own involvement, also had no problem throwing Cora under the bus in the very same statement, saying, quote, and the video decoding of the signs originated and was executed by lower-level employees working with the bench coach. Lie, 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 lie. F***ing didn't even have the balls to say Cora's name. Please tell me. I would love to know how in the f*** was Alex Cora the mastermind of a sign-stealing scheme that started in 2016 when he was at ESPN and ended in 2018 when he was busy kicking your f***ing ass in the ALCS en route to a World Series title that year. Can I please get an explanation on that, Mr. Luhnow? You owe Alex Cora an apology, you rat f***. Is Cora completely innocent in all of this? No. By all accounts, he was involved in 2017 when the Astros won the World Series. It appears now that he was simply following orders, partaking in an already existing system that had been there prior to his hire that also existed after he became the manager of the Boston Red Sox. But this idea that Cora was the mastermind, that it was all his doing, that he held the players at gunpoint to follow through with the scheme, is just one big fat f***ing lie. These scumbags threw Cora under the bus, claiming that it was his idea, his doing, and that it should all fall on him. All of you, you ratted out the one guy that wasn't there anymore because all of you other motherfuckers were still getting a paycheck from the Astros and you protected your own.
That is profound in its own very crass way with all the beeps. But look, Jeff Luhnow is a snake, a serpent. He's the one that orchestrated all this. He denied everything, threw a lot of people under the bus.
He's got the slimy play. Use the legal system feel to him.
Yeah, and let me ask you this. Let me put it this way: Alex Cora absolutely, positively was involved and
he
cheated.
He said that.
But do you respect him?
Yeah, he's a baseball
Jeff
guy.
Luhnow, absolutely
baseball guy.
Jeff Luhnow absolutely, positively orchestrated, maybe even organized the cheating. Do you respect him?
I respect his work as a general manager. I think he's a snake of a human being.
I don't respect him. Yeah, as a person, I don't respect him. And that's all you need to know. Cora stood up in front, face forward, said he did it, leaned into the story, accepted it, owned it, and I think more people respect him now. And Jeff Luhnow, who knows where he's hiding, under which rock.
The slime ball rankings in Houston coming up at 1:35. You do not want to miss that. There are some entertaining trips back in time, to say the very least. But one of the faces of the Astros scandal, which involved cameras, Alex Cora in town. Astros looking for that third straight dub over the Red Sox tonight. Speaking of cameras, time for a photo shoot. Stanford Brout joins the show for his weekly visit. Stan the man, never shy when it comes to the camera. How you doing, my friend?
J-Lo, how's it going, man?
Good to talk to you. I had fun with you at the wedding over the weekend, man.
Likewise, had a great time. Landry obviously was probably too busy somewhere being bougie and grapevine to show up, but we'll go ahead and give him a pass, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Good one, Stanford.
It was fun.
Not on a good roll right now, Stan. Mm-hmm. Stan, Julio Jones. A potential Julio Jones trade. Of all the potential destinations, which destinations do you think would shake up the NFL landscape the most?
I think Julio Jones going to my Raiders would shake up a lot of the NFL landscape.
Okay. Elaborate on that.
Because you put him with a Henry Ruggs, you put him with a Derek Carr, you put him with a Josh Jacobs in the backfield where you can't load the box. Oh, yeah, and that tight end. What's his last name? Oh, yeah, Darren Waller, Pro Bowl tight end. I think that would make them really much of a juggernaut on the offense side of the ball and definitely somebody that could go in and hang with the Kansas City Chiefs because we saw that they were able to smack the Chiefs last year, should have been twice, if they simply would have found a way to get off the field late in the game in that fourth quarter on Sunday Night Football. I think that would shake up the NFL. I think him going to the Green Bay Packers would shake up the NFL, but I don't really see that happening. I think there's a number of teams that Julio could go to, and it would really make the NFL even more interesting than what it already is.
What team would be scarier in the AFC South? Because he's been linked to every team not named the Houston Texans. Jaguars, Titans, or Colts if he goes there?
Oh, Jaguars, nobody cares. If he goes to the Titans, nobody cares. They got Ryan Tannehill. They're still more of a run-based offense. No, I mean they may win one more game than the usual, but that wouldn't be anything. I think that him going to the Indianapolis Colts, that would make them much more intriguing. We already know the Indianapolis Colts will probably win the division again this year. Carson Wentz is going to have a bounce-back year. He would probably be my candidate for comeback player of the year of some sort. And I think you match him with the T.Y. Hilton. You match him with a the other young guy that came out of USC just last year.
Michael
Pittman. I think having one of the best offensive lines in all of football, and then a deep threat like a Julio Jones, someone who's a little bit younger than the T.Y. Hilton, someone who's still got more tread on the tires, I think that would make them very intriguing. But I think him going to the Jaguars and him going to the Titans, I mean, that's just like a yawn. That's not going to improve their chances of any stretch of the imagination.
Great Stanford Brout joining us for his weekly visit. So you're buying Carson Wentz stock, huh?
Landry, that guy I think was on pace to win the NFL MVP award in 2017, if memory serves correctly, I think. I could be wrong, though.
No, yeah. You are. You are correct. So what's that got to do with buying Carson Wentz stock after he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league last year?
Because I think that back when he was in 2017, I think his offensive coordinator, I think it was Frank Reich. I'm not sure what team he's coaching right now.
I think it's the Indianapolis Colts.
Thank you, J-Lo. I appreciate you actually following where I'm going rather than trying to play devil's advocate and just being an ass for no reason at all. But that's why I would go and I'd buy Carson Wentz stock, not because he's playing at an Aaron Rodgers level, not because he has the talent of a Tom Brady or a Pat Mahomes, but because if he's going to bounce back in this league from the woes that he's had the past couple of years in Philadelphia, it'll be with him actually teaming back up with the same person that was able to unlock all of that magic that he had back in 2017. And remember this, the kid came out of North Dakota State University. It was the number two pick in the draft. He didn't get drafted that high out of a school that nobody really cares about at the end of the day. He didn't get drafted that high because he's got no talent at all. He just was able to have it unlocked by Frank Reich. And hopefully with him teaming back up with him, with them being reunited, that can go ahead and reignite that lightning in a bottle that they were able to create several years ago.
So how good of a season are we talking? I mean, obviously not bad as last year. Somewhere between the MVP and last year? Like how good of a season are we talking for Carson Wentz?
Well, I think that, you see, last year, the Indianapolis Colts were able to go toe-to-toe with the Buffalo Bills in the wild card round. And there were several points in the game where Indianapolis could have overtaken Buffalo. But we all know Phillip Rivers, as accurate as he is, Phillip Rivers is a statue. There are certain times where he's not able to get away from the pass rush. He's not able to elude the pocket. And I remember about a year and a half ago, there's a guy that I know, J-Lo, I think you might be familiar with him also. He now coaches in the NFL. And he told me, he said, in today's NFL, to have a good
to have a good offense, to be successful quarterback in the NFL, you have to have a superpower. You have to either be really, really accurate. You have to be really, really athletic. You got to be able to elude the pass rush. You have to have something that's going to help you get over the hump, transcend your offense to another type of stratosphere. And that's one thing that Indianapolis did not have with Phillip Rivers. Great quarterback, Hall of Famer. I know you guys like to push back on that. I played against Phillip Rivers. But the one Achilles heel that he has, he's not mobile. So if that pass rush starts to get in there, like Buffalo was starting to do, Phillip Rivers, a guy like him, he's pretty much deemed he's deemed as just a sitting duck because he can't get away from it. Carson Wentz is athletic. He's got a stronger arm than Phillip Rivers. Carson Wentz can go ahead and get outside of that pass rush. He can make things happen with his legs. That's where I see Indianapolis being able to go to another level. I don't mean that they're going to go and beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't mean that they're going to go to the Super Bowl. I don't mean they're even going to the AFC title game. But I think that Indianapolis will take a step forward because Carson Wentz brings a different dimension to that offense that Phillip Rivers could not bring.
We know about Aaron Rodgers and his greatness, but just what exactly does Denver go into the AFC Championship game mix and Super Bowl mix with Aaron Rodgers overnight?
I think that that makes them really, really, really intriguing because they have the pieces to do all of that. Because if you were to go and put Aaron Rodgers up there in Mile High Stadium where the air is thinner, that ball's going to travel even better off of his arm up there. Please believe me. I can tell you from personal experience, having a Cortland Sutton coming back, having a Jerry Jeudy now entering in his second year, you have the running back in the backfield was in San Diego and Los Angeles for a couple years, Melvin Gordon. I think that when you now factor in how they went ahead and they upgraded the secondary, Kareem Jackson's going to be back at safety. They drafted Surtain. They got Darby from the Washington Redskins. They went and picked up Kyle Fuller from the Chicago Bears. He's now going to be back up underneath Vic Fangio, the head coach, who I believe is one of the best defensive minds in the NFL. See the San Francisco 49ers defense from 2011 through 2014. If you don't believe me, I think that that right there, and then automatically we all remember Von Miller, enough said. So I think that when you factor in all of that, putting a quarterback under center who's not going to be dancing on the sidelines doing the, you know, the latest TikTok dance move that everybody wants to do. When you factor in that, somebody who can get the ball to everybody on the field, I think that that puts them definitely one of the top teams in the AFC just off of talent alone on paper. Now, what all material together, what gel together within 1 year, that remains to be seen. But definitely, you put Aaron Rodgers in a blue and orange jersey up there in Mile High Stadium in Denver, a mile above sea level, that definitely is going to have teams in the AFC just on paper alone.
Smell last place for the Raiders, though, if that happens.
I'm sorry, Lancher, did you say something? I couldn't hear you over you mumbling over there. I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
I'm smelling last place in Vegas if Rodgers goes to Denver.
Lancher, listen. I had a really good weekend.
Tell me about it.
Today
did you
is
do?
Wednesday.
What did you do this weekend?
It's hump day. Yeah. I witnessed a very great union on Sunday along with J-Lo.
Yeah.
Landry, do not make me jump through this phone and slap the hell out of you.
You said the Raiders You said the Raiders with Julio would be a jugger what?
A juggernaut. Landry, do you want me to spell it for you? Do you want me to spell it for you, Landry?
Yes.
I can.
Go ahead.
Lancher, I know that we're pressed against time because I know you got to get to the next segment. Lancher, do not make me jump through this phone and slap the hell out of you.
Not a baby.
You're trying me. You're trying me.
Stan,
I'll tell you, Stan was looking sharp, man. Stan was looking sharp.
Of course he was.
He was. Yeah.
Of course he was looking sharp.
He was looking real sharp. It was
a great time. Great scenery.
Now, did he actually appreciate the food? I could see him not eating his plate.
I waited him over. He came and ate with us. It was fun.
Yeah. Eater. I said, but
excuse me, sir.
I was
can you make this medium plus, please?
Medium
now, Landry. Oh, no. And you know, I'm so glad that you said that. I was just watching a program on another network a couple days ago.
Joel Klatt. He's a college football color analyst for another network.
Pride of Colorado.
Exactly. He mentioned the other day a few unknown facts about himself, and he mentioned how he loves his steak medium plus.
Joel's so bougie, that too, guy, though. Joel's bougie, though.
No, but no.
But remember
that one time. Remember that one time one of the somebody who was like a waiter or like a chef called the hotline and said that, oh, no, there's no such thing as a medium plus. That's just what we tell customers, just to go ahead and let them think whatever they want to think. So whoever that was, I hope you're listening, in your face. Because clearly it's not a myth about a medium plus temperature cooked of a steak. Whoever the hell that was, it said that, oh, they, you know, Stanford doesn't know what he's talking. Exactly. Like, come on. So if Joel Klatt says he likes his steak that way, clearly I'm not out to lunch and I'm not just having, I'm not just imagining things. So whoever the hell that was, yeah, take that.
Boy, that guy got you going, Stanford.
Yeah, he did.
My goodness.
Calling me, making me seem like I'm delusional. I know my steak.
I know my steaks.
Woosah, Stan. Woosah. Have a good one, my man. We appreciate you as always.
Hey, man, y'all be good. Talk to y'all next week.
All right, Matt Stanford route right there on Sports Radio 610. One of my favorite times of the week. High on Carson Wentz, buying stock.
Big time.
Which, I mean, I don't know what Carson Wentz is going to. I just didn't know Stan was as high on him. I know Seth is not. Seth this morning said he is not believing in Carson Wentz. Stanford seems to be on the opposite side of things. It's going to be interesting to see how
I'm intrigued. I don't know if that's a cop-out or what, but I'm definitely intrigued.
What about the Texans roster? We have Texans depth chart projections and John Lopez's takeaways from it, plus the art of the handwritten thank you notes. Apparently it lives on with one of the best players in the NFL. Round the league next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.